shaking it, shaking it.
Questions about authenticity reach way beyond politics. Take music, for instance, where hip-hop artists vie for street cred and talk about keeping it real. And the history of other genres, from folk to blues to punk, is filled with fights over who's genuine and who's not. But music critic Yuval Taylor told Steve Paulson that this cult of authenticity is actually full of holes. Taylor's the co-author with Hugh Barker of the book Faking It, The Quest for Authenticity in Popular Music.
If you're in disco, you're not really concerned about authenticity. It's a very hedonistic kind of music. The same thing's true with rockabilly. On the other hand, if you're doing punk or folk, these are musics that have a certain moral sense to them. Honesty tends to be very important for these musics, so honesty goes hand in hand with the idea of authenticity there.
My girl, don't lie to me. Tell me, where did you sleep last night? Come on, tell me, baby. In the pond, where the sun don't ever shine. I wish you were all night too.
It seems that this whole question of authenticity plays out especially powerfully in folk and blues, and you go into some detail talking about one of the legends in folk music, Lead Belly, the black singer who was discovered in a prison in the South by the folklorists John and Ellen Lomax. But the question of Lead Belly's authenticity is actually quite problematic, isn't it?
Yes, it is. John Lomax promoted Lead Belly as, well, as one newspaper headline put it, a murderous minstrel. You know, there was this idea in the early 20th century, which I think still survives today, that the most authentic thing you could get would be pure id, the untamed savage. And Lead Belly was, for many people, a symbol of that untamed savage because he was a murderer. He was in prison several times for attempted murder, and yet he was a singer who seemed to sing from his soul. He had a rather primitive guitar playing method and somewhat primitive singing method too. But Lomax distorted this in many ways. He made Lead Belly wear penitentiary clothes and prison clothes for his performances rather than a suit, which is what Lead Belly wanted to do. He limited Lead Belly to performing only what he considered authentic folk songs rather than the pop songs of the day, which is what Lead Belly wanted to perform. And he treated Lead Belly with a lot of condescension. Richard Wright said something to the effect that John Lomax treated Lead Belly as if he was his slave. So it's a rather complex story.
And in fact, didn't John Lomax actually, once he had gotten Lead Belly out of prison, didn't he have Lead Belly working essentially as his personal servant? I mean, he was shining shoes and fixing
exactly
Lomax's coffee.
That's right, and driving him around. Yep. And Lead Belly turned around and sued Lomax. So he got his own, I guess.
And yet it's more complicated than that because without the efforts of the Lomaxes, we wouldn't know anything about Lead Belly today, would we?
Well, that's absolutely true. And Lead Belly has proven enormously influential. And what's interesting is that people for whom authenticity is very important, such as Kurt Cobain of Nirvana, cite Lead Belly as an influence. I mean, Kurt Cobain called Lead Belly his favorite performer and performed one of his songs as a kind of swan song on his last record, MTV Unplugged. So he's referencing the kind of authenticity that Lead Belly stood for without realizing its complexities.
My girl, don't lie to me. Tell me, where did you sleep last night? In the pines.
Well, tell me about how Kurt Cobain performed a famous Lead Belly song. It was Where Did You Sleep Last Night? What did Cobain do with that song?
He did this thing that Robert Johnson used to do where you sing one verse in one register and then shift it up an octave when you do the reprise. And that imbues it with so much passion. Lead Belly sang it more or less straight, and Kurt Cobain imbued it with this drama that's very gripping. I don't know if it's any more or less authentic than Lead Belly's version, but it's just as good for sure.
My girl, my
girl, where will you go? I'm going where the cold wind blows. In the pines, where the sun don't ever shine, I will shiver the whole night through.
Kurt Cobain's band, Nirvana, was famous for trying to carve out their own sense of authenticity. I mean, they argued vociferously against the commercialization of the music industry, and this seemed to torment Kurt Cobain himself.
Yes, it certainly did. I mean, in his suicide note, he talks about not wanting to fake it and wanting to keep it real and feeling unable to do that anymore. You know, it's not as simple as to say that authenticity killed him. Obviously, heroin was involved, as well as guns, but it certainly was a factor.
Well, it raises fascinating questions about what we mean by authenticity, then. Are we talking about music that goes back to some, quote, pure roots? We can talk about what that sense of purity or uncontamination means. Or does authenticity just mean a singer who's bearing his soul, who's showing us vulnerability and raw emotion?
Yeah, it does get back to that question. I mean, and that brings up two things in terms of this particular performance. Kurt Cobain was showing us a tremendous amount of emotion in the performance, and I'm sure that emotion was genuine. Yet, as any performer knows, you have to summon that emotion out of somewhere, and it's not necessarily what you're feeling at that particular moment. If he were to be really genuine, maybe Kurt Cobain would have sung about what it was like to be under those hot Klieg lights on a TV stage. The other question is, what race is this song? Is it black? Is it white? Is it some combination? When Lomax found Leadbelly, he was embarking on a project to search out the true Negro folk songs and to try to find performers who were isolated from whites. That's why he went to all black penitentiaries, because he thought that performers there would slough off the white idiom and become truly Negro. Obviously, that's quite a fantasy, and Leadbelly got his songs from all sorts of sources.
Now then, on the other side of the racial line, there's Jimmy Rogers, the legendary country singer, the so-called father of country music. But again, he himself was profoundly influenced by black musicians, wasn't he?
Yes, and he performed the blues. And when the person who recorded him, Ralph Peer, first heard him perform blues, he said, well, that's nigger music. That's not going to fly. You know, white music and black music don't mix. And of course, his first hit record was Blue Yodel, a blues song, and it just eclipsed everything that had come before. It was such a huge hit and was so profoundly influential. And he made a career of singing these blue yodels, which are basically blues songs with some yodels thrown in after the chorus.
I'm gonna buy me a shotgun with a great long shiny barrel. Gonna buy me a shotgun with a great long shiny barrel. I'm gonna shoot that roundup that stole away my gal.
Now, it would seem that another musical genre where authenticity is absolutely crucial is punk.
Oh, yes.
Do the issues play out any differently there?
Yes, they do. What happens with punk is that you get people emphasizing authenticity at the same time as creating elaborate personas. The early punks all used stage names, and then they started dressing and acting to try to match their stage names, all the while saying that they were being as authentic and honest as they could be, and they were a big change from the rest of the 70s. So you get Sid Vicious turning into a rather vicious musician. Johnny Rotten, or John Lydon, adopted the stage name Johnny Rotten, then went back on it, abandoned Rotten, and decided to be himself again when he formed Public Image, which was a band almost devoted to exposing the kind of shams of punk. And then you had other bands, Susie and the Banshees or Tom Verlaine or Richard Hell. I mean, everyone was adopting these stage names to position themselves as something that they weren't, all the while claiming that they were being more honest and authentic by doing so.
And sometimes this would catch up to them. I mean, Sid Vicious seemed to believe this nihilistic stage persona that he'd taken on. He ended up killing his girlfriend and himself.
Yes. Well, I don't think he killed his girlfriend, but I guess that's still an open question.
So should we just get rid of this whole idea of authenticity in music?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that it has its uses. What we should do is discuss more honestly what the component of authenticity is. For example, I think we should use words like sincerity rather than authenticity when that's what we mean. Or we should use tradition if that's what we mean.
By sincerity, you mean does the performer really mean it, or is it just an elaborate show?
Right, exactly. And autobiography is another very useful term, I think. Some songs are clearly autobiographical, some are not. But what's nice about authenticity is that the quest for it, that people striving to be more authentic, has produced some amazing music.
Give me some examples of that. I mean, what comes to mind in particular?
Oh, I think Kurt Cobain and Neil Young are the people that come to mind immediately.
So how does that play out with Neil Young?
Neil Young was trying to be as immediate and in the moment as possible. His whole concern is with being real, being more real, in his words. And he did this most effectively in his album Tonight's the Night, recorded in 1973, where he got everyone pretty drunk and stoned and had them switch instruments and play first takes and make a lot of mistakes. And it produced a really raw, ragged recording that sounded unbelievably immediate, as if you were right there. And he was singing about the deaths of his friends, and the whole record sounds like a wake. It's a really amazing moment in popular music history, and I don't think it would have happened without Neil Young's constant striving to be authentic.
Although the answer is not unknown, I'm searching.
That's Neil Young's rendition of World on a String. Yuval Taylor is the co-author of the book Faking It, The Quest for Authenticity in Popular Music. He talked with Steve Paulson.